welcome to Maine Public's Your Vote 2020 Democratic Senate primary debate. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and I'm coming to you via Zoom. This is an unconventional debate in which we talk to the three candidates hoping to unseat Republican Susan Collins in November. First, let's meet them in alphabetical order. First, Sarah Gideon. Sarah Gideon is currently Maine's Speaker of the House of Representatives. She has served in the Maine legislature since 2012, and before that, served on the Freeport Town Council. Before entering politics, Gideon worked as an advertising account executive. Bree Kidman of Saco is an attorney who specializes in criminal defense and has never held political office. And Betsy Sweet is a longtime lobbyist for social justice organizations in Maine. 2 years ago, she ran in the Democratic primary for governor. Sweet lives in Hollowell. We will start off again in alphabetical order with 1 minute opening statements, but in the interest of fairness, afterwards, throughout the hour, we will take turns. Go ahead, Sarah Gideon.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Sarah Gideon, and for as long as I can remember, I've believed that each of us have a responsibility to improve the lives of people around us. As a town councilor, as a state representative, and in my 2 terms as Speaker of the House, I've learned that public service is how we do that. And I've also learned that if you're willing to sit down and really listen, we can still get anything done. That's how, under my leadership, we've protected and expanded reproductive health care and health care for Mainers with pre-existing conditions, for seniors, and for kids under age 26. We've set gold standards to combat climate change, and we've built job training programs that not only help businesses, but also lift people out of poverty. Now, one thing you can know is even though I know how to get along with others, I can still stand up and fight. Standing up for what's right and getting things done, it's not what we see in Washington today, and it's why I'm running for U.S. Senate.
All right, thank you. Bree Kidman. All right, apparently we cannot hear Bree Kidman, so we will come back to her and give her full minute of time. We'll go to Betsy Sweet. Betsy, well, hopefully we can hear you.
Thanks. I'm Betsy Sweet, and I want to be your voice in the United States Senate. We are living in an incredible time of crises: the global pandemic, the economic collapse, racism, the climate crisis, and those are hard for all of us. It's a difficult time, and there's a lot of pain. But it also can be a time of incredible opportunity. It can be a time where we can actually have big solutions that match the size of the problems that we face, like Medicare for All, like a Green New Deal. I feel like my entire lifetime as an advocate and a leader in Maine has prepared me for this moment, because I've had a career of making the impossible possible, like passing the first Clean Elections Act in the country and the first Family Medical Leave Act in the country. But you know, this race against Susan Collins, I can win this. The polls show that I can win this. But this can't just be about being against Susan Collins. This has to be about what we are for and what we are for the Maine people. That's why I'm running, and that's what I'm looking forward for us talking about tonight.
All right, let's see if we can hear Bree Kidman now. Bree Kidman, go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
My name is Bree Kidman. I'm an attorney, an activist, and an artist. I'm in this race because I'm qualified. I have federal and state policy experience, graduated law school with high honors, and my day job is helping poor and working class Mainers navigate government programs while fighting for their constitutional rights. I'm in this race because I personally share in the concerns of average Maine households. I'm a median income Mainer with student loan debt and bad health insurance. When I say that we need Medicare for All and the Green New Deal and student debt forgiveness, what I mean is I need those things too. Lastly, I'm in this race because I'm fed up with our toxic political process. Our elections have become a game of who can spend the most money on shameless self-promotion, even though we're in the middle of a pandemic and an economic crisis. That system incentivizes hoarding money over doing the right thing, and it doesn't represent or serve the people of this country. Our campaign spent over 75% of the cash we had on hand at the start of this pandemic on relief for struggling Mainers. I'm not waiting to get elected to show up and do the right thing. So if you're looking for a senator who's got experience making good use of law and policy, personally invested in improving things for average Mainers, and dedicated to making our political system work for us, I'm looking forward to showing you why
Thank
I'm
you.
The best person to do the job.
All right. Well, the COVID-19 pandemic is going to be the topic of our first broad question this hour. We're going to have three broad questions to start things off. The first will go to you first, Bree. The COVID-19 pandemic has laid bare dramatic inequities on many levels. Essential workers, many of whom are at the low end of the wage scale, are among those most at risk of contracting COVID-19. As of mid-June, Maine had the highest level of racial disparity in COVID cases in the nation. What will you do as a junior senator to change policies and fix these healthcare inequalities?
So the first thing is fight for Medicare for all. I think that in a pandemic, we can see that we are only as healthy as the people with the least access to healthcare. So ensuring that everybody has the same high quality access to care, make sure that everybody has the same bite at the apple of getting treated or making their way through this. That said, I think it's really important to think about the way that income inequality impacts this issue. No one should have to risk their life for, you know, less than a living wage. And that's where we're at right now. We need a living wage for everyone in this country. And we need to make sure that we are expanding pandemic unemployment programs and other assistance programs so that people aren't having to make choices to put their health at risk in order to make a living or in order to have enough to live. And we have to make sure that we include everyone in those. We have to make sure that we're including gig workers, that we're including independent contractors. We have to take a look at who's getting left behind and make sure that we are taking care of them to make sure that we make our way through this safely.
All right. Well, Betsy Sweet, would you like me to repeat the question?
No, I've got it. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I couldn't agree more as of the holes that this pandemic has laid bare in our system. And healthcare is the most important one. And we have to pass Medicare for All. If healthcare is a human right, it has to include everybody. So Medicare for All is our path forward. And we have never had a moment like this. You know, tying employment to healthcare was never a good idea. But now there are 40 million Americans who are living the fact that that is a terrible idea because they've lost both their jobs and their healthcare. And the racial disparity that we see in COVID in this state and across this country speaks to our economic inequality and the fact that we have so many economic barriers to people of color. You know, white collar workers who can stay home and worry about their internet, they're not having to worry about exposing themselves to this virus. But people who have to go to work and don't have the benefit of paid leave or paid sick leave, they have to go to work. And often those are people of color. It is time that we have workplace policies that benefit everybody. And if we had those things, this pandemic would not be affecting people so disproportionately.
All right. And Sarah Gideon, would you like me to repeat the question?
No, thank you. Jennifer, you said it best. Coronavirus has laid bare all of the inequities that exist between us. And we absolutely have to take action. These are the very same things that we knew that we had to work on before. The same people who are essential workers don't have childcare for their children. We need to think about how kids can go back to school so people can go back to work. We need to make sure that every person in this state and in this country has access to healthcare they can afford. And we have to look at the systems that have set us up for racial inequities and racial injustice overall. Here in Maine, we came together quickly as Democrats and Republicans to get things done, but that's not what we've seen in Washington. We have seen a colossal failure of leadership from President Trump, aided by Senate Republicans. And when we think about the fact that we do not have proper protective equipment, we do not have testing in place, and we do not have the focus that we need and funding that we need from the federal government, there is work that needs to be done from this U.S. Senate.
The second question will go to Betsy Sweet first. The Black Lives Matter movement has put the legacy of racism in the U.S. squarely and urgently in the spotlight. All three of you have expressed solidarity with the protesters. What specific laws would you put forward or support to address systemic racism and reform the criminal justice system?
Betsy. So in order for us to address this, we have to do three things. First, we have to say we have to stop, and then we have to apologize and make reparations and repairs, and then we have to do things differently. In terms of the police brutality that we are seeing, which people are being arrested and hurt and killed because they are Black, just because they are Black, there's three things I think we can do at the Senate level. One is we have to get rid of the qualified immunity doctrine that allows police to be not prosecuted for what they do on the job. The second thing is we have to stop the 1033 program that sells military style equipment to local police departments. And the third thing is to provide for independent investigations of police homicides. in general, I think we have to look at institutional racism. And again, we need a process of reparations where we begin to actually address the full economic range of racism and how it's existed for the last 400 or 500 years in this country. And until we take that on, we will never have a meaningful Black Lives Matter movement.
All right, Sarah Gideon.
There is a legacy of bigotry in this country that has put or manifested itself in systems of oppression and also of injustice and inequity. And we see it everywhere. We see it in access to education for people of color. We see it in access to healthcare. We see it in rates of poverty and rates of incarceration. And tragically, we also see it in the number of incidences of people of color with brutality when they encounter law enforcement. We have to take immediate action. We have to first understand what these systems are and how they exist across all sectors. But specifically regarding law enforcement, here's what we need to do. We need to ban racial profiling, just like we did here in the state of Maine in 2019. We also need to create a national police registry of misconduct so an officer cannot be hired somewhere else. We need to ban chokeholds, and we need to make sure that we have zero tolerance for the killing of unarmed Black people. We can do better.
All right, Bree Kidman.
Racial profiling is already illegal, but when you walk into a courtroom in Portland on arraignment day, you see a lot of faces that are a lot of different colors in a way that's not represented in the over 90% white population in Maine. This hasn't been done by making reforms to the police. As a white person, as someone who is an accomplice to the racial justice movement, my job is to elevate the voices of people who are calling for change. And what they have said overwhelmingly is to defund the police. As someone who is the child of a police officer, that's a difficult thing. We have to really kind of have those conversations and see what that looks like. But people across the spectrum agree that police have been asked to do things that are not their job. Not every social ill can be solved with a gun and a badge and the idea that someone's going to be taken off to jail. So we need to look at how we can fund and provide for systems that more accurately address people's societal needs instead of relying on police to solve every particular issue that could come up. I also agree with what Betsy said.
I'm going to go to the third question. This will be for Sarah Gideon first. Sarah, Earth saw its hottest month ever in May. The Gulf of Maine is warming faster than most ocean ecosystems, some say every other ocean ecosystem, and we're already seeing its effect on marine species. What would you do right away as a U.S. senator to address climate change?
Jennifer, climate change will have catastrophic impacts on everything from our public health to our economy and all of the things in ways that we're already experiencing it in Maine that you just mentioned. That's why in the State House, under my leadership, we have taken drastic action, both setting goals and standards for increasing renewable energy and reducing dirty carbon emissions. That's the hard work I've done, but I know what we need to do in the Senate. We need to, first of all, rejoin the Paris Climate Accord. We also need to make sure that we are setting those same kinds of goals for lowering carbon emissions and increasing renewable energy generation. We need to look at our transportation system and our energy grid and think about how we modernize and overhaul them for this century. And we need to think about the buildings that exist, how we can make them more efficient, and how as we build new things, we make them more efficient. I remember my son Alec asking me when he was 8 years old if we were all going to melt as this world got hotter and hotter. He's 16 now. It's time for action.
Bree Kidman.
Yeah, so I think that there are a lot of different ways that we can go about the climate crisis. And I think that what we do is a little bit less important than how we do it, because we all know that we need to get carbon emissions down. We all know that we need to modernize our energy grid. But the thing that kind of gets left out of the discussion is that we can't have profit-motivated corporations making those decisions piecemeal, state by state, corporation by corporation. What we see when that happens is that profit remains the central priority, and there's just not time for that. We need public-funded initiatives to make this an economically just transition that prioritizes the actual goals of addressing climate change, of getting net emissions down to zero, and also which uses this economic opportunity as a chance to put people who have been left out of previous phases of economic innovation in a position to reap the benefits of what could be America's best chance to kind of become a leader in innovative technology again. It is an opportunity to do things in a way that centers the issue over profits and a way to lift up people who have been negatively impacted before.
Betsy Sweet.
Yeah, climate crisis is the crisis, I think, facing us. You know, when it was 100 degrees above the Arctic Circle just yesterday, we are in serious trouble. And in Maine, our economy depends on the climate. Our fisheries and lobster industry, our agriculture, our forestry, and even our tourism depends on our leaders taking bold action, not by 2045, but in 10 years. And that's why we need a Green New Deal. I am a strong supporter of the Green New Deal that will address the climate crisis by getting us to zero fossil fuels in 10 years and reducing carbon emissions through regenerative agriculture and through transportation, good public transportation that's clean. It also will provide 23 million good paying jobs. But the best part is that can be right here in Maine. We can be the epicenter of the creation of new regenerative agriculture by getting rid of the $20 billion a year we spend on fossil fuels in this country and redirecting them to new kinds of generation here in Maine. And we can also deal with the climate at the same time. And we have to do it now, not by 2045.
Now we're going to move on to some questions that have been designed for each candidate specifically. These have been crafted by our new staff. You'll each have 1 minute to respond. We're going to start with Bree Kidman. Bree, you have no political experience and have never been elected to public office. Why do you think you're qualified to serve in the United States Senate?
Actually, I think it's a benefit rather than a hindrance that I've never participated in the political system as it stands today. You know, the idea that the way that you win an election is to raise as much money as possible and spend as much money as possible telling people what they would do or what you would do if you got elected, that doesn't serve us, and everybody acknowledges that it serves us. So coming at this from an outside perspective, I have an opportunity to think about how we could do this differently. It's not that I have no experience. I've worked in federal policy. I've worked in state policy. I'm cited in a number of different policy documents. And I'm the only person in this race who's been to law school and has studied the function of law and how it's applied in practice. I'm a practicing attorney who puts laws to use every day. And I can tell you that the majority of social work and social change doesn't happen on the paper. It happens in how we enact it. So having all of this experience, just because I haven't been elected doesn't mean that I'm not prepared to do the work. It's just a matter of what we focus on and thinking about who we want to be making these decisions for us. And I maintain that I'm the best person for the job.
Betsy Sweet, you're next. You have advocated for Medicare for all. How would that be fiscally possible now, given the economic damage done to the U.S. economy by the pandemic?
Actually, even the most conservative think tanks that have studied this shows that Medicare for all saves us $2 trillion over the lifetime, over 10 years. So we have the most expensive medical system in the world right now with some of the worst outcomes. Medicare for all will save us money. It will make sure that every single person is covered for everything. It will make sure that we don't have to argue with our insurance companies about what to cover. And it also will give us better healthcare outcomes. The thing that we'll lose is we'll lose our monthly premiums, we will lose our deductibles, we will lose our co-pays, and we'll lose haggling with our insurance companies. And the way that we pay this, we will also bring down the price of prescription drugs, because there will be one negotiator. You know, I met people all through this campaign, and it is the number one issue that we see, including a woman I met who had cancer and a great prognosis, but decided that she wasn't going to go ahead with her treatment because she didn't want to fight with her insurance companies. This is not about just what we do. This is about who we are. And we must pass Medicare for all now. It's cheaper and better.
Sarah Gideon, you've been criticized for not speaking out publicly on major issues and for more often using written statements than actually granting interviews to reporters. This comes at a time when voters are asking for more transparency from candidates. If you are elected to the U.S. Senate, how will you be more accessible?
Jennifer, all through this campaign, and in fact, all through my years in the State House, I have prioritized and made sure that I am everywhere in this state, listening to the people of Maine, understanding what's happening in their lives, and then going back and doing the hard work successfully that it takes to make a difference. I've done that during my years as state representative, during my 4 years as speaker, and on this campaign trail, where we've been to all 16 counties, hosting Suppers with Sarah, our version of a town hall, inviting anybody and everybody who wants to attend and to ask me any question they want to. We've continued to do that, of course, virtually during the course of this pandemic, and had many, many interviews, including with you, Jennifer, on this very station. I think listening to people and talking to people is what it's all about, and it is what I will always prioritize as a senator. If we're not listening to people and accessible to them, then we are no longer people that they should be voting for. And I think that's why when Susan Collins hasn't done a town call since her first year as a senator, we need to replace her.
Now we're going to offer the chance for candidates to ask each other questions. In each case, you'll have 1 minute to answer. I'm asking that you keep the questions brief. If you keep the questions brief, we will have time for a follow-up if necessary. And we're going to start with Sarah Gideon asking a question of Bree Kidman.
Thank you. So Bree, you have talked about how when you decided to run for this seat to begin with, you were largely inspired by Susan Collins' votes for right-wing judges who were not qualified to actually become judges. And we have seen that in play, of course, over and over again with decisions that are made, including with the appointments of people to lifetime appointments, both on the Supreme Court and the appeals court. I'm wondering if you can just tell us a little bit about what it means to you that Susan Collins continues to appoint to confirm these judges on behalf of Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump, and what you think it means for Mainers.
Yeah, that's a great question. So watching these appointments over and over again has been disheartening. At this point in this country, about a quarter of the federal bench are Trump appointees. And I don't know the number offhand, but a good number of them have been rated as not qualified by the American Bar Association. What that says to me is that this has become a political issue. The appointment of the judiciary, which is supposed to be a branch that is kind of above the political back and forth. You know, the judges, while we know on the Supreme Court more or less where they stand politically, they don't have a D or an R after their name. They're supposed to be looking at the law and looking what the law means and looking at how the text of the law interacts with how it's used. And making decisions based on something that's bigger than politics. It's making decisions based on what is right. So seeing that Susan Collins continues to kind of go along with these appointments, rubber stamping them over and over and over again is it's devastating, it's frustrating, and I think that we deserve someone who is going to be a little bit more accountable, a lot more accountable than that.
Bree Kidman, it's your chance to ask a question of Betsy Sweet.
Yeah, Betsy, my question for you is, you ran for governor and lost in 2018, so I want to know why you're running again now for a federal office.
Thanks, Bree. That's a great question. You know, I learned so much running for governor 2 years ago. I got to meet some amazing people.
I can't hear anything.
But what I learned mostly is that we had this, many of the issues that we are, that Mainers are facing every single day really need to be solved at the federal level. Medicare for all, the climate crisis, erasing and eliminating student debt, even the issue of systemic racism has got to have a federal component to it that we can't do here in the state. And so that's why I've taken this on. You know, we did better in that governor's race than anyone in the Democratic establishment thought we would do. They thought I would come in sixth or seventh, having run as a clean elections candidate. But I found that people are hungry for real solutions. They're hungry for someone who will come and listen to them and talk with them in a real way, talk about what's really happening and how we are going to push for bold solutions. That's the fight. I've been an advocate for 37 years in the state of Maine doing that. And I want to take that fight and those skills to Washington for Maine people.
Betsy Sweet, your chance to ask a question of Sarah Gideon.
Hi, Sarah. It's so nice to have you here. This has been a great discussion and it's been wonderful. And we are learning so much about each other. And I'm sure the listeners are learning a lot. But this is the first forum that you've had in months in which you've been willing to participate. Bree and I have been in 12 of them. But we have this opportunity to continue this discussion tomorrow and the next day on network television. Can you commit now that you will be part of those discussions so that all Maine voters on network television can hear our what we think and our ideas and how we interact with each other?
Betsy, thank you for your question. It's nice to see you also, and I'm happy to be here together. In fact, in our third forum during this campaign and our second in just a couple of weeks, I want to just reiterate what I said earlier, that I think that making sure as a candidate, we are available to people everywhere in this state, that we're able to answer their questions, that we are reaching out to them and communicating, that is the most important thing. Now, I've been honored to share a stage with you 3 times, and I look forward to continuing this campaign, talking to the people of Maine as we head towards July 14th and then November 3rd.
All right, Sarah Gideon, it's your chance to ask a question of Betsy Sweet.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. Betsy, during this campaign, you've talked a lot about the people that you represent in the State House, people who, as you say, don't have a voice or normally a seat at the table, including working people. And when we think back to 2017 and that Trump tax bill that was passed, working people most certainly weren't at the table. In fact, as we know, corporations got a huge break to the tune of $2 trillion nearly, and middle-class people will see a rise in their taxes eventually. Now, we know that Susan Collins was one of the deciding votes for that, and I'm wondering if you can tell me, A, how you feel about Susan Collins' vote for that tax bill, but also, what's the impact that you see on Mainers here?
Well, thank you for the question. And you know, I think that this tax break is one of the worst votes that Susan Collins has ever taken. But we have seen a history, both in Maine under LePage and also under Trump, of this, the entire income inequality in this country getting wider and wider. So now we have five people in this country who have as much wealth as the bottom 50%. And that is largely due to what we see in our tax code. And so the people that I have represented, as you said, for 37 years, low-income people, women, children, people with disabilities, we are on the suffering end because there is not a fair tax code and people have not been taxed appropriately. What we need in this country is a wealth tax. We need a 0.1% tax on people who have over $32 million of net worth. Let me say that again, $32 million of net worth. And then we can get $4.5 trillion into the economy, break the hold of billionaires on this country, and make sure that the services that people, real Maine people need will be available.
Bree Kidman, it is your chance to ask a question of Sarah Gideon.
Yeah, Sarah, on Maine Calling the week before last, you said that getting money out of politics is your number one priority. But you're the only person in this race who spent millions of dollars on ads and lists of people to call for more money. And you're the only person in this race who's had fundraisers with fossil fuel executives and accepted money from corporate funded leadership and idea PACs. So my question to you is, why are you lying to Maine voters? And wouldn't it make it harder to attack you if you simply told the truth about how you're running this campaign?
So Bree, as we all know, special interests and corporations have far too great a say in Washington, where politicians take their money directly and then do their bidding. It's in fact why we see little action on the things that mean the most to us, whether it is reducing the cost of prescription drugs, expanding healthcare, or combating climate change. But my record here in the State House in Maine is very clear, and I stand by it. We have taken on the health insurance industry. We have taken on the drug companies, instituting programs to lower the cost of prescription drugs. We've taken on the fossil fuel companies, combating climate change, and even the energy utilities. That is the kind of person that we need standing up for us in the US Senate. Mainers can't be left behind again. And I have made the decision to reject corporate PAC money in this campaign. Any talking points to the contrary are the ones that the National Republican Party and Senator Collins herself continue to put out.
Betsy Sweet, your chance to ask a question of Bree Kidman.
So Bree, you have blazed a path in lots of ways in this campaign, and it's very honorable, and I admire you very much for doing it. One of the things that you've done is you've stopped raising money at all, opposed to the question that you just asked Sarah. And so in the midst of this campaign and during the COVID crisis, how have you been able to get the word out to people?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so the philosophy behind my campaign is this: doing the right thing says more about who you are than any ad that you could put out. When you show up and you do the right thing by people, people talk to their family, to their friends, to other people about it in a way that you just can't buy. And I think that at this point in our country, we all agree that we need the best representation that can't be bought. So we had initially intended to have 16 fundraisers across 16 counties for local Maine causes, because I think that doing the right thing is the way that we get the word out and is the way that we show how we are going to be different from Susan Collins in a measurable, tangible way. We weren't able to do that because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So instead, we spent 75% of the cash we had on hand at the start of the pandemic on getting relief to Mainers who are struggling. We've had a telethon to raise funds for folks who've been left out of relief programs. We have a robust social media campaign, and we've shown up to every single forum we've been asked to.
All right. Well, you are watching the Maine Public, Your Vote 2020 Senate primary debate among the Democratic candidates for U.S. Senate. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Election Day is July 14th, and Maine Public's Your Vote 2020 online resource offers important information about the candidates and issues you will be voting on. Find interviews with the candidates vying for their party's nominations for the U.S. House and Senate, information on the bond issues on the July ballot, and re-watch these debates in our on-demand archive. Go to mainepublic.org/yourvote. And welcome back. You are watching Maine Public's Your Vote 2020 Democratic Primary Senate Debate. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and we are going to turn now to some of the questions that were submitted by you, the voter. We had so many questions, and we're only able to take a few of them, but we want to ask everybody who submitted a question, say it to everybody who submitted a question, thank you, and you might see it pop up in the future. We're going to start with a question from Grace Fenwick in Freeport. I just graduated from college this May, and like many other college students, recent grads, I am very worried about student loan debt. What actions will you take to address the rising costs of higher education? Betsy Sweet, you first.
Well, Grace, congratulations. And my twins actually just graduated this May as well. We have got to make college education free, public college education free. You know, we used to pay for college education through the eighth grade in an agricultural economy and through in it when we were working in the mills and industrial economy through high school. And now our economy requires that people need to have a college or technical education, and we need to make it free. We also need to go about canceling student debt. There's $1.5 trillion in debt that students hold right now. And that is crushing an entire generation, making it impossible for them to buy a house or a car or start a family or even afford to take a job here in Maine. It is not a question of having enough money, it is a question of setting priorities. When we're spending $20 billion a year on fossil fuel subsidies and allowing students to be crushed under the weight of this college debt and not providing education access to every single American student, then it's time to change our priorities and fight for that.
All right, next to Sarah Gideon.
Thank you very much, Grace, for your question. And as we all know, access to education is one of the most important gifts that we can give, not just students and children, but all of us as a society. Right now, however, access to education depends on where you live or what the income of the family that you were born into. And that's just not right. Whether we're thinking about a two-year college, a four-year college, or a technical component of college like a certificate, it needs to be affordable for everyone. That's why here in the state of Maine, we have done a couple of things. Number one, making sure that lenders cannot mislead borrowers in terms of student loans. Number two, also cracking down on predatory for-profit colleges. And I co-sponsored a bond which would forgive student loans for people who come back to live in Maine. But on the federal level, here's what we need to do. We need to have transparency around costs to lower those costs. We also need to have grant-based programs to allow people to go to college and graduate debt-free.
All right, Bree Kidman.
Yeah, so I agree with what Betsy said about free public college. It's time that we had free public college. And if we were taxing everyone appropriately, we would have the resources in order to have free public college for everyone. I think we also need to look at student debt forgiveness for everyone. Students go to college with the idea that they're going to learn something and they're going to get a job when they leave in a way that allows them to make enough money to pay it back. That hasn't been true. It wasn't true for me when I graduated into the financial crisis of 2008. And I don't think it's going to be true for people who are graduating now, unfortunately. We need to look at ways to deal with the fact that our country has had students mortgage their futures and really forestall themselves from being able to meaningfully participate in the economy. With interest rates, you know, above the federal rate, with interest rates that take from our students just for the privilege of being able to get an education, we need to find a way to rectify that, and we need to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to learn what they want to learn in order to participate in our society, because ultimately an educated population is better for all of us.
All right. The second question comes from Michael Dunn in Bangor. He asks, what would you do about the skyrocketing costs of prescription drugs? Sarah Gideon.
Thank you so much for that question. It's so important, and it's unbelievable that we have seen almost no action on the federal level, but we all know why. It's because big pharmaceutical companies and the lobby have been able to step to the front of the line and have their way. Here in Maine, we didn't want to wait for Washington anymore. So what we did was we rolled up our sleeves and we got to work with a package of prescription drug alleviation methods that would lower the cost of prescription drugs. Meanwhile, in Washington, Susan Collins has taken more than $1.5 million from the Prescription Drug and Healthcare Agency. Here's what we need to do. Number one, we need to allow the federal government, Medicare, to negotiate for lower drug costs. Number two, we need to cap out-of-pocket prescription drug costs for seniors. And number three, we need to end pay-for-delay schemes, which keep generic drugs from coming to market and allowing all of us to have lower costs. This is the time for action, and I intend to lead on this in the Senate.
All right, Bree Kidman.
Yeah, so all of the proposals that Sarah said sound good, except that Medicare for All addresses literally all of those things. When you have single-payer healthcare, the only customer that pharmaceutical companies have to deal with in this country is the United States government. There is no better negotiating power available than to be the only buyer. Most Medicare for All plans that I've seen have an out-of-pocket cap of around $200 per person per year. Now, I think that could be a little bit more responsive to people's income and a little bit more flexible to people for whom $200 is an absurd amount of money, and maybe a little bit more thoughtful about people who could pay more than that. That said, I mean, when we are the only buyer of drugs in this country, the pharmaceutical companies are going to have no choice but to negotiate with us in good faith, and are going to have no choice but to find ways to accommodate for us, like they have in other countries with single payer healthcare.
All right, Betsy Sweet.
Yeah, you know, I met this amazing woman on the campaign trail, and she had been she told me she'd just gotten back from a cruise. And I said, oh, that's so great. Did you have a good time? And she said, well, yeah, but that's not why I go. I said, oh, why do you go? She said, well, a bunch of friends and I go down every year and we go on a cruise and we go to the Caribbean and we buy a year's worth of pharmaceutical drugs because they are the same drugs at 1/10 the cost we can buy here. And we come back and we've been able to buy our drugs and get a cruise out, which we could never have afforded, for the price of what we would pay for here in this country. So something is very wrong, and it is totally related to money and politics. The pharmaceutical industry spends $7 billion a year to make sure that the pockets of the politicians are lined, to make sure they do nothing about this issue. And sometimes it's through formal PACs, and sometimes it's through their executives. And I think we have to make sure that that stops. And Medicare for All, as Bree said, is absolutely the way that we can negotiate a price, a fair price for everyone, and is the ultimate solution.
Elias Kahn of Orland has a question about federal fishing regulation. He asks, do you agree with NOAA's proposed regulations on lobstermen to protect endangered right whales? Bree Kidman.
Yeah, I think we need to have more conversation with lobstermen about what is feasible. I think we need to talk more with people who are in industries who are already shifting, because ultimately climate change is shifting the lobster industry. It is shifting our fisheries. It is changing the way that these industries are to operate. Regardless of what regulations come in place, they're going to change because the sea level is rising and because the temperature of the sea is rising. So we need to have conversations about how we can sustainably transition these industries to a path that is more environmentally sound, and which also allows them to continue making a living in this changing climate, because ultimately it is going to have to change. There's no way around the fact that these industries are going to have to change. But I think that what we can do in order to make sure that that change works for Mainers is to bring them to the table and make sure that those conversations include the people who are directly impacted, so we can figure out how to make that change work for them.
Betsy Sweet.
Absolutely, I would not support what NOAA has been doing. It, to me, it's an example of everything that is wrong with the bureaucracy in Washington. So a bunch of people who are scientists look at a bunch of data, which is not complete, and they make a decision based on something that's going to affect the livelihoods of every lobster man and woman in Maine and in the United States. My grandpa lobstered. And so I remember, you know, helping to build the wooden buoys and pulling the traps up with him. And the fact is that there are many, many issues that go into the death of the right whales. A lot of them are ship strikes. And one of my lobsterman friends said, you know, what happens is the whales get struck by ships out further, and then they become disoriented and they come in, and that's the only time they get involved in traps. And there are so few of them. But we cannot do this with bureaucrats and people who don't know anything about this industry or don't live it making these decisions. Nothing about us without us. Lobster men and women and fishermen have to be at the table before regulations are issued, not afterwards.
Sarah Gideon.
Jennifer, the women and men and the families who count on them, who lobster, are part of our very tradition here in Maine, and they're also an enormous part of our economy. I completely disagree with Noah on this issue and the way that they have gone about this. Their data is incomplete, and as a matter of fact, it is incorrect, because what we know is that Maine lobstermen, through the years, over and over again, have continued to take more measures to keep the right whale safe. And yet there has been no evidence of a Maine lobsterman actually, or a Maine lobsterman's boat actually hurting a right whale. We need to stand up for the lobstermen and women here in Maine every day in everything we do. This economy is hurting. We have seen what President Trump did with his trade and tariff wars, where there is an 84% hit on this economy. We have to think about how the federal government can support our fishermen instead.
All right, a question from Deirdre Caseta in Freeport. What would be your framework for evaluating judicial nominees for both the Supreme Court and the lower courts as senator? Betsy Sweet.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest threats to our democracy is the fact that the third branch of government, the judiciary, has become a political football, especially with the Supreme Court and then all of the judges that are you know, vetted and confirmed by the United States Senate. It is appalling. You know, it used to be that judges were above that those politics and really looked out for the Constitution and for our democracy. And we see over and over again, the judges that Susan Collins has agreed to, who are political appointees, the most obviously being Kavanaugh, we see over and over again how they then make political decisions about the law instead of what was intended by the Constitution and by our laws. And so I think we have to look at a nonpartisan vetting process in which the American Bar Association put forward nominees to a president from which they select, and then they are appointed to the Supreme Court with the confirmation of the Senate. I will say that I would never appoint someone. I do have a litmus test, and that is Roe v. Wade. And I think we have to make sure that we are going to protect a woman's right to choose and have qualified people sitting on the highest bench in the land.
Sarah Gideon.
Thank you, Jennifer. You know, it's the middle of a pandemic. And as we sit here in the state of Maine, as towns around us look for help, as people are in danger of losing their housing or getting sick or closing their business for good, we have seen the Senate continue to appoint, or rather confirm, judicial nominees while not taking on the future CARES Act funding that we all desperately need. Now, when I think about what I think are the qualifications for a judicial nominee, I know that they need to actually be qualified. A low bar, unfortunately, that many of Trump's judicial nominees have not met, as we've seen the American Bar Association say that. And yet we've seen Susan Collins vote for them over and over again. They also need to have the temperament to be on the court. And finally, they need to have a respect for precedent. We cannot allow what has been happening for 4 years to continue to happen. Hundreds of judicial nominees sent to the Senate and confirmed with a rubber stamp.
All righty, and Bree Kidman.
So I agree with some of the things that Betsy and Sarah have each said. I think that we do need judges who are qualified. That is a low bar, but qualified is the minimum here. We also need judges who do have a good temperament for the bench, who are prepared to look at things from an apolitical standpoint and look at them as law. However, I don't agree with using a particular case as a litmus test, or even particularly like stare decisis as a judicial canon that we're going to put first, because if everybody just respected precedent, we would never have had Brown versus Board of Education. We would never have had some key civil rights victories. So I think what's important when we're thinking about a judge that's going to have a lifetime appointment, we need to think about somebody who is prepared to apply the law in a way that is responsive to the way that the law is used and the way that people are going to live under it. We need to look at people who are qualified, who are analytical, who have the correct temperament, and who are prepared to meet the moment as society changes, kind of ahead of what's written in the law.
Next question, Karen Benoit of South Berwick asks, at a time when America is confronting our history of racial injustice, we continue our one-sided support of Israel, which routinely violates the civil and human rights of Palestinians. Are you aware of the harsh treatment of Palestinians by the Israeli government? And will you speak up about the violation of lives, property, and livelihoods of the Palestinians by the Israeli government? Sarah Gideon.
Thank you. Such an important question. And I want to start by saying that I think we need to support Israel. We have been such good allies and we have so much in common. But I think that what has happened over the past couple of years and the way that we are seeing both Israel act and President Trump support these actions like annexation are not good for Israel, for the Palestinians, or for the world at large. What we need is a two-state solution, and that is one that will recognize that Palestinians need to be treated with their human rights need to be respected, and that ultimately, if we are going to have peace in that region and peace in the greater region, and therefore peace around this world, that is the solution that we need to be seeking, and our country has to play a part in that.
All righty, Bree Kidman.
The peace plan that the Trump administration came out with most recently did not consult any Palestinians in the process of deciding what the actions would be. It did not include a right to return home. And I think that when we're thinking about this issue, it's important that we are negotiating in good faith. Negotiating in good faith requires that the people who are most directly impacted are the people who are making the decisions, and that includes Palestinians. This shouldn't be an issue that the United States and Israel is deciding how to resolve. It doesn't. It's not our issue to solve. Israel and Palestine have to be at the table, and if the United States wants to play mediator, okay, maybe we can help, but we don't get to say over the people who are living in that region what needs to be done. That's not our role in the world, and that's not an appropriate role to take on in the world. The violation of Palestinian rights continues to this day. And the fact that our government kind of wholesale endorses that by cutting them out of the negotiating process is a problem that we need to address.
Bree Kidman, Betsy Sweet.
Yes, I absolutely am aware of the horrific treatment of Palestinians and I will speak up in addressing it. You know, one of the great experiences of my life was to actually help do some training at the Seeds of Peace camp right here in Maine, where Tim Wilson brings together young people from Palestine and from Israel and to live together and to talk about peace and to talk about what it is that they want, which is the same thing that we all want, which is security, equity, and justice for everybody. But that can't happen when Israel is annexing pieces of the West Bank, when they will not allow Palestinians to have sovereignty over their own land, and when they are hurting and doing incredible human rights violations and bombings and continually annexing more land and more land. We have got to make sure that there is the two-state solution that people talk about now is not possible unless we start from a system of justice, fairness, and equality for every single party to the negotiation. We're not there yet. And when we get there, then maybe a two-state solution or a one-state solution that includes all people.
We have time for one more question from the audience. So we'll go to this one from Bill McClellan in Rockport. He asks, lately politics has been very divisive. What is your plan to bring us back together as a state and as a country if you are elected a US Senator? Bree Kidman.
It's a great question. So when I think about the divisiveness in this country, I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that people who have nothing are angry. People who have little are angry. People who are experiencing the extreme wealth injustice that we are seeing in this country are frustrated and are fed up with it. And unfortunately, millions and millions of dollars go into the idea that we should fight each other about it instead of the people who keep perpetuating that system. So as a senator, I think that the biggest thing that I can do to bring this country back together is to fight against wealth inequality and to fight to make sure that everybody in this country has what they need. Because only when we all have what we need can we stop looking at one another like people that we need to blame and start looking at how do we make things even better than that. I think it's a values issue. At this point, we can all agree that things need to change and we can all agree that needs aren't being met. So once we work on meeting those needs and finding a way that all of those needs can be met, we can go forward from there.
Betsy Sweet.
Yeah, it is a great question. And you know, in my 37 years as an advocate, the only way I got anything done was to make sure that we brought everyone together, and we always started with what the values are. For example, in healthcare, there's not a single Mainer who believes that if you're sick, you shouldn't be able to go to the doctor to get health and to get care, or that you should go bankrupt doing it. But you know, the divide that I found in this campaign is not really right and left. It's really up and down. There is an economic and political elite in this country that has betrayed the rest of us by making sure that they are taken care of by their corporations, their businesses, and their political system that is basically drowning out the voices of ordinary Mainers and ordinary Americans stays in place by running campaigns and businesses that raise billions of dollars while the rest of us are struggling to make a living and to make sure that our voices are heard. So I think the vast majority of people share values in Maine and across the country. And now we just have to make sure that our government actually reflects those.
Sarah Gideon.
Thank you, Bill, for that question. You know, I think listening, communication, and seeing each other as human beings is how we overcome this. During my years in state government, most of those years were some of the most challenging and divisive years we've ever experienced here in Maine. We had a governor who was trying to divide us every single day and to pit one group of people against another. And so every day and every issue was an exercise in bringing people together to get something done. When we thought about combating the opioid crisis, something people said, you can't do that and get that done, we were able to bring Democrats and Republicans under my leadership together to override that veto. When we transitioned from a Republican governor to a Democratic governor, and I remained speaker, I had to make the decision and think about how we could heal and bring people to trust each other again. And that's why I combined our seating. So there is no more proverbial aisle. We need to listen and work together. That is how we will get things done.
We're at the point now where we have closing statements. The order for these was drawn out of a hat. And Betsy Sweet, you will be going first.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having us, Jennifer, and for all of you for watching. It's decision time. There is more at stake in this election than we are ever going to learn from a bunch of ads on TV. This could be our Social Security moment, the time when we actually can turn a crisis into an opportunity. The question is, are we ready to step up? Are we ready to make sure that every single American has the health care they deserve through Medicare for All? Are we ready to make sure that we pass a Green New Deal to deal with climate crisis and create thousands of good paying jobs in Maine? I'm ready. I have spent my life in Maine making sure that the impossible becomes possible to benefit Maine people. So I'm asking you, if you are ready to step up, vote for big ideas, vote for big change, vote your heart, and on July 14th, rank me, Betsy Sweet, as your first choice on the ballot.
And second, Sarah Gideon.
Thank you. As a state and as a country, we are facing unprecedented challenges, and Mainers, as usual, are busy taking care of each other. It's what we do. But in Washington, we've continued to see the same inaction and partisan bickering and special interests jumping to the head of the line. Mainers deserve a champion. Mainers deserve someone who is going to make sure that we're meeting our challenges, whether that's having access to seeing a doctor, keeping our kids safe, making sure that our kids have an excellent education, taking bold action on climate change, or standing up and saying that equal rights are important no matter your color, your race, your gender, your identity, or your religion. That is what I have done, both on the town council and in the state house. I am a proven leader in this way, and I want to stand up for Mainers in the Senate. We desperately need a champion, and I'm asking to be yours. Thank you.
And finally, Bree Kidman.
Polling shows that any Democrat in this race can unseat Susan Collins. You've heard what's been said here today, and it's up to you to choose who you trust to represent your interests. But in a ranked choice race, I want you to consider this. A first choice vote for me, regardless of whether I win or lose this primary, is itself an action that changes the system. I'm outspent 1,000-1 in this race, which means every percentage point I get is one that I got by being 1,000 times more effective in how I use my resources to get the word out without compromising my values. If it's too far-fetched to win this primary, your vote will roll over to your second choice, no harm done. But future candidates who are ready to find ways to break through the system of buying an election will gain valuable data on how to be more effective next time. But if I win, an entire country's worth of disheartened progressives who've watched the Democratic establishment buy race after race this cycle will have something to rally behind and will have cracked the code on a way to campaign that Susan Collins couldn't even begin to compete with. If I win, the system will already be changed. And in a race where everyone is clamoring to say how they'll fix it if they get elected, I'd like to propose that it is worth a ranked choice vote to find out if we can fix it sooner.
Thank you, Bree Kidman. And that is the final word. Thank you for joining us for this unconventional Your Vote 2020 Senate primary debate. If you missed any part of this program, you can see it in its entirety on demand at mainepublic.org/yourvote. For all of us here at Maine Public, I'm Jennifer Rooks. Thank you for joining us.